From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome to the December episode of the Bletchley Park podcast, Bletchley Park and Beyond. This month, we're celebrating our oral history project. 7 years and 450 interviews in, our volunteers are still heading around the country, gathering new insights with each veteran we interview. We sat down with Jonathan Byrne, our oral history officer, for an update on the project and the latest on the stories we're finding from beyond the park. Jonathan, we're celebrating 7 years of our oral history project this year.
We are. Time has flown, and we've now recorded over 450 interviews with veterans of Bletchley Park and its outstations.
That's fantastic. And how many volunteers do we have working with us now?
Well, we have about 20 volunteers helping me with the interviews and the transcripts. And of course, many of those volunteers work in the park and other areas like stewards and guides.
Marvellous. And that helps us to cover all of the UK?
Not quite. We have to travel a little bit occasionally, but certainly the volunteers that I do have are perfectly willing to travel beyond their immediate area. So we've certainly interviewed right up in the north of Scotland and the opposite end of the country down in Cornwall. So we don't do too badly.
That's wonderful. And you mentioned we're up to 450 now, so we're still finding veterans to interview?
Yes, we are. Almost certainly every month now, we hear from at least one veteran or their immediate family who we hadn't known about before, who's still alive, wonders if we're interested in hearing from them at all. So, of course, we go back and say, yes, we certainly are, and tell them about the recognition that veterans have, such as the badge from GCHQ and Freedom of Bletchley Park from ourselves. And they're usually delighted to be interviewed as well when we do this.
And their stories are just adding more and more to what we know about life and work here at the park.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I interviewed a lady yesterday. You know, I learnt new things about some of the procedures that happen at Bletchley Park that it was an area I'd heard of before, but didn't really know what they did there. So that was very useful, yeah.
So those new insights that we're getting from our veterans are feeding into quite a lot of our other activity here, aren't they?
I'm really pleased when we have a new exhibition, and part of it is either text or even better, actual audio from the interviews that my volunteers and I have done. And I've seen many very favourable comments on things like TripAdvisor or in correspondence with veterans and visitors, that they find that a very interesting part of the experience of visiting Bletchley Park.
And certainly in exhibitions, we're drawing on that as an incredible resource, a lot more than we have in the past. And this year we opened the Veteran Stories exhibition in the Garden Room that focuses purely on the Oral History Project and the voices and the thoughts and the stories of those veterans we've been out to interview. You can read them, you can listen to them, you can explore the project in a bit more depth. But also in all of our exhibitions, so the new Hut 11A exhibition that opened in March includes audio from a lot of our veterans across bomb operators and mechanics. And we use quotes in a lot of things as well. We opened a small display on the 80th anniversary of the ATS this year, including verbatim quotes from our oral history project as well. So a really useful and valuable resource hearing from the people who worked here. But we're not just looking at the people who worked here now, are we?
No. Bletchley Park was surrounded by a community which, although most of them wouldn't have had any idea at the time what was going on here, they were vital in providing housing, billeting for the people who worked here, running the transport services, perhaps working, helping to build the huts and blocks at Bletchley Park. And so over the last few months, we've been going out to interview people who grew up in the Bletchley Park area during the Second World War and may remember having people billeted on their families. And we're doing this with the support of Milton Keynes Council, for which we're very grateful. It's not only the Bletchley Park story we're telling, but the wider history of what is now the Milton Keynes area. So I think it's going to be very valuable for all concerned.
How are you finding the people to interview?
We've gone out through local publications and websites, and we've had quite a few responses already. People just phone in and say, you know, I've seen the article in a local publication, and would you like to hear from me? And also through word of mouth. So many of our volunteers, being so local, have, of course, contacts with people who either worked here or know people who worked here. So that's often bringing in more people to interview, or at least if we don't do a formal interview, they can perhaps write just a few notes. One of the things I found, naturally, a lot of the people now were extremely young during the war. One lady telephoned a few weeks ago, pointed out she was born in 1941, so wasn't going to remember a great deal. But in fact, she told me over the phone quite a few things. So it's great that people are realising that they have something to tell us and are coming forwards.
Excellent. And if anyone listening to this has a connection with someone who may have known the Codebreakers or had someone billeted with them at Bletchley Park, do get in touch, because we would love to talk to them. So out of our new project have come some interesting new insights into the park and how it was perceived perhaps in the local area. You have one to share with us this episode?
Yes. The first one is Val Pinker, who lived with her family. She was in her teens, I suppose, at the start of the war. And they lived up just outside Wolverton. And she tells us about how her parents were told, you're going to have somebody billeted on you, there's a war on. And instead of it being evacuees, as they were expecting, young children, it was actually three or four young women from Bletchley Park. And what was very interesting was she remembered their names, and they were all names that we knew about. They were names who, through our other oral history and Roll of Honour collection of information, were names that we actually knew. Sadly, all deceased now. But what was quite interesting was this local oral history project is very much experimental. We're not quite sure what we're going to find out. And what's also becoming obvious is we're getting completely different stories, because this particular lady, living up near Wolverton, she never went anywhere near Bletchley Park. And again, that perhaps reflects the fact that, you know, people didn't move around quite as much as they do now, and perhaps Bletchley Park was a place you wouldn't have been encouraged to go too near anyway at that time. But certainly very good details on the young women billeted on her family and the parties and things they got up to, which sounded quite fun.
Well, my family lived in London. I was born in London. And then my family moved up to Old Wolverton. I think it was possibly my mother's brother who lived at Wolverton House, much bigger house on the way to Stoney, had found a very nice house. And the rent was £82 a year.
Wow.
And it was a lovely house. And it had quite a few acres of land. And when the war started, I remember I met my first boyfriend. I was 13, and he lived at the manor. And we met on our bikes, and we said, oh, what's going to happen now? I said, well, I hope it's a war. We're very exciting. Awful.
I've heard that before. Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
I'm still ashamed of it. And it was quite soon the council came to see my mother. And he said, would you like to have a number of children evacuated from London? She nearly fainted. She wasn't terrifically maternal, you know. And he said, well, Bletchley Park needs places for their staff. And so we put up four girls. Mm. And they had their own kitchen and bathroom, about a third of the house. It was quite a big house. And we used to wonder how they got to and fro. Now I read in the book there was lots of transport, so they must have had that. I don't think they ever had a car. And we made friends straight away.
So how old were they, roughly? Can you remember?
They were in their early 20s. Some had been, I think all four had been to college, of course. And they were great fun, you know. And whenever they had a party, they asked me. And there's Janet Muir, who was the star. And do you know, she's not mentioned once in Ayres of Rooks.
Well, I've looked her up, and I'll give you a little bit of what little we know about her later on, if you like.
Good.
Yes, yeah. When somebody said, would you like to put up people from Bletchley Park, presumably they didn't give a clue what Bletchley Park was about.
I'm sure they didn't. I don't know what...
No, I suppose that would have been a conversation with your parents, but... So they didn't say it's the government? Did they say anything like that?
I don't know what they said, because I was probably at school but she was horrified.
Who was horrified?
My mother.
About what?
Evacuated children from London.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
She had enough children of her own. She just had a third babies.
Yes.
And I don't suppose that was particularly planned, but my brother and I were then in our early teens, yes. Mm.
So you think they were probably taken by transport, and maybe they walked down the end of the road, so you wouldn't have necessarily seen where the...
They must have walked up the drive, and then there was the main road between Wolverton one way and Stoney Stratford the other. Hmm. We were told... Now, I don't quite how this was put. I don't think Bletchley Park itself said we mustn't ask them any questions, or whether they said they weren't allowed to talk about anything that was work-wise.
Yeah.
I don't know how it came about that, or probably they told us they couldn't.
Yeah, because I suppose you being, quite young and but befriending them, you would have said, well,
oh, yeah.
You would have been curious as to what they did, yes, I guess. Yes. Yeah.
I wonder if we'd heard of Bletchley Park before my mother was asked. I can't remember. I can't remember when they first came.
No. Had you ever heard of Bletchley Park pre-war as a house, as an estate with the Leond family there?
No, never. No. Mind you, my uncle hunted everywhere, and I dare say, and there were stables at his house. And I dare say...
I mean, you were probably a little bit far away for it to be a place you would have known about. It wasn't really local to you, was it?
I can't remember any talk about Bletchley Park until they came across. No.
Did you have the same four girls with you all throughout the war, or can you remember when they left, roughly? Or
I think we had the same ones all the way through.
And they arrived in 1939?
I think it was, yes.
From what we know about them, I think that would make sense. Yes. So they were among the first arrivals. As far as you could tell, were they new to that line of work?
I don't know, but they impressed on us that we weren't allowed to ask any question at all, so it never found out.
And the only reason I asked that was a lot of the people came up from London, were already working for the organisation, but I suppose if they were fairly young and fairly soon out of college, they were probably wartime recruits rather than...
Well, one I know came, Sally, I think it was, came from the Isle of Wight. And of course, Janet was very Scottish, but I don't remember where the others came from. And most of them were nice, but there was one who was a bit touchy. But I don't remember which one. Well, she was very tall, I remember that.
All right. And were you aware of them working some what seemed like strange hours? Were they coming and going at all times?
No, I didn't notice that.
It's just that generally people worked shifts.
They did, didn't they? Yeah. Yes. Because I was at boarding school a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't. Yeah. Well, would I have been in bed by the time they went to night shift? I don't know. Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, don't worry, because the negative answers are fine. It all helps establish, you know, what you did know, what you didn't know. So I think it's great, you know, your awareness and, you know, how much you knew, etc. Did you ever, in your travels, ever see Bletchley Park?
No, never. No. Not till last Sunday. Whenever it was, yeah.
Yes.
No. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I had one full time getting lifts back from the convent. When I was in sixth form, they said, you can spend the weekend at home if you want to. So a nun would escort me up a very long drive from the convent and plump me down by the bus stop. And nearly every time a jeep would stop and take me on board. And they were just lovely, actually loading me up with candy and biscuits and all this and dropped me off at my house.
Did you become aware of more and more people living in your area who were obviously working at Bletchley Park?
No, I didn't actually. That's a bit strange, isn't it? You'd think there would be a number.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously your house could only hold four, but, you know, in the neighbouring areas, as more people arrive, more...
I did meet someone years later, whether I lived abroad in several places, but once she said, oh, yes, I was at Bletchley Park. Was she in there? I don't know, but she said she was billeted in Wolverton, and it was a nightmare. The only bath they had was in the kitchen.
And did your uncle not put any of them up in Wolverton House? You were living in Wolverton Park.
Yes.
But he had a really big house. Did he not put any...
Well, he had a couple of servants and a groom and weekend parties continually from London. So he probably... I don't know how he wriggled out of it, actually. No, that's strange.
Your father, you say, was working for a jeweller's...
Yes, the one in Bond Street, and I've forgotten his name.
JJ.
But one day they rang him up from there, from London, and said, could he come up? They wanted to have a chat with him. And I don't know how they heard that he was very clever with making things.
Mm. Precision.
And he went up, and then the alarm went off. So they all had to, I don't know where they went downstairs, wherever it was. He was scared they were going to be bombed there. Anyway, they discovered he was very, very clever at making things. He was a watchmaker, and they said what they wanted. It was some part of a... What was it ending up in?
It was in was it in the Spitfire? Was it, what was it in?
It had to go into aeroplanes.
A tiny part that was crucial for the aircraft. And because he was a precision engineer, he, with really good workshops, he could make the parts. So I think he set up a workshop, didn't he? And
two men came on motorbikes every day to collect the latest ones that had been made. So it was a vital part. And he found a
a workshop,
a stable, or something quite.
Was it in Stoney, his workshop?
He was in Stoney, Stratford.
Right. Oh, so basically he was sort of, not exactly conscripted, but sort of taken into the war effort.
Yes, very much.
And then he was asked to go and try and defuse an unexploded bomb in Soho.
That was it, yes, that's right.
I suppose he knew how clockwork mechanisms worked, if nothing
else. It was just the tiny mechanisms, and he had to sort of make a decision.
He was a civilian, though, during this period, was he, still?
Yeah, he was in the First World War.
Yes,
But he was very clever at making things.
Wow. But did your father have to go into the Home Guard or anything like that, or ARP, or...?
Don't think so, no. Of course, he was working all day in this. Don't think he had to do anything else.
Too busy.
When there was an air raid warning, we'd go out and stand in the garden and see if we could see that he could tell whether it was a Hun or not. We didn't seem to think they might drop a bomb on us.
Yes. Yes, that's right. I know you said there weren't many raids, but were there air raid warnings quite frequently where you had to take cover?
Yes, I think that happened, but not very often. There was a pub, and he mentions it, called the Galleon. Has anyone mentioned that to you?
I've heard of it, but not sort of in detail.
Well, he walked down to Old Wolverton to the Galleon, which was past the way into the church. And it was very popular, actually. It did crop up, I think.
So, Asa Briggs' book. Yeah. Did I read right? You met Asa Briggs, is that right?
What I remember very clearly was Asa Briggs walking down the drive wearing a private khaki, full khaki thing. And visiting the girls, and he was very funny. His book isn't very funny at all, actually. Which is a pity.
Yes.
But he's quite popular with them.
I mean, actually, well, what I'll do, you did give me the names of the girls who were with you. I'll just read them out. Sally Adams.
Yes.
Hester Bull.
Yes.
And she became Elphinstone, which you may or may not have known, when she married. Jean Dunlop. Muir. And Janet Muir, yeah. Jean Dunlop became Munro. And Janet Muir became a
Are they still
wind.
Alive?
No, I looked them all up.
Oh.
They're all on the Roll of Honour, so we know the names.
Oh.
They were mentioned as colleagues by a veteran who did give us their details.
Oh, that was good.
So that's how we know they worked in Hut 6 or Block D6. That's all we have. Oh, it looks as if they'd never made any contact with us at Bletchley Park as we are now, so they probably sadly passed away some years ago. And, of course, they worked in the same place as Asa Briggs, hence his appearance.
There were lots of parties, weren't there, Mum?
They had parties at the flat quite a lot. Oh, yes, and Janet Muir, she was very much admired by an American naval captain. And so he came quite a lot, and he always brought me a box of chocolates because I was always invited to the parties. They were very, very good to me.
And what was this captain's name? I think you did tell me before.
Oh, Hutch, no.
Friendly.
Hunt?
No. Friendly, was it? Captain Friendly?
Oh, yes, it was Captain Friendly.
Yes, we know his name. I should have looked him up.
It was him. And he was a great admirer of Jean.
Now, you say you had parties, and again, pardon me asking these sort of basic questions, but it's wartime. What did people have at a party?
Oh, well, it wasn't terribly luscious or anything. I can't really remember what we ate or, but they produced some kind of drinks, I suppose, and they would have to have been off. Why do I remember them in the daytime? Perhaps it was at weekends, and they go out and buy or make sandwiches. Nothing, you know, grand. And I don't even remember. I wouldn't know about the alcoholic bit because I didn't drink any of that. But there was a nice atmosphere.
Yes.
You know.
Did they borrow your gramophone record?
My mother and I, we were always out for the latest records, we like that. Oh, yes, there was one Graham, he was terribly tall, but he was marvellous. I'd tell him any title of any music he could play, because we had a grand piano downstairs. Graham, he was. But, yeah, I don't know where he was in. He was in from Bletchley Park.
Probably, yeah.
And there was a naval chap, too. He was billeted out in another village where the Ern was a colossal snob, so he didn't enjoy that much.
What about, were you aware of lots of Americans coming into, particularly further east or towards Bedford? Were you aware of the big American influx?
I think we heard a lot of chatter about the Americans, but I didn't take it in really. Mm. So I was at boarding school so much.
Yeah.
Though actually my My family thought it's far too dangerous for the children. We'll send them to New York, to my mother's brother. But then that awful tragedy happened when the ship went down with the Lockheed. So,
oh, yes.
But I was brought home and had to go to the day school for a while I was waiting for a ship place. And so there I was with all these East End kids who were very tough. And they didn't like me much. But the great thing was this school allowed you out at break time and actually go down to the cake shop and buy some cakes to eat. I remember that was one plus about it.
So our next veteran is someone who really represents perhaps both sides of our project at the moment. She was someone who worked at Bletchley Park but was also from the local area. Can you tell us a bit about her?
Yes, Gwendolyn Herbert, who we interviewed a few years ago as a veteran, and of course it came out that she not only worked at Bletchley Park, but grew up in the local area. And quite a few of the young women who worked here actually came in through that route, usually because they had people billeted on them who said, well, look, you know, now you're leaving school, come and work with us. We can't tell you what it is, but it's very interesting. So she came here to work in 1943, in the transport section, where she was really helping to run the enormous system of cars and coaches that took Bletchley Park's workers to and from work, from Bletchley Park to places like Wolverton, Leighton Buzzard, etc., to get them to and from work, which must have been quite an enormous task to have been involved in. Another bit of local flavour from her is that she remembers the fates that the Leon family had at Bletchley Park when they still owned it up till the late 30s.
Before the war broke out, did you live locally?
Yes, at New Bradwell.
How old were you when the war broke out?
12.
You were 12, right. So you were at school?
Yes, mm-hmm. In New Bradwell until I passed 11 plus in those days.
Right.
And then went up to the grammar school. And from the grammar school, I didn't want the future in what they were sort of suggesting. So I passed over to the Science and Art, the Technical College at Wolverton, to do shorthand and typewriting and commercial arts.
What do you remember about life in this area before the war?
At that time,
yeah.
Very quiet. You could go anywhere and never have any fear of anyone coming into your house, leave doors open. It was a quiet, pleasant area, yes.
And your family was with you? Were you the only child, or did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters,
right.
Jean and Beverly. And no, we were all quiet, and I did a lot of reading in those days. I loved reading. In fact, my parents, they had a car, which in those days, not many people had a car. And once a fortnight, we used to go down Northampton and do a little bit of shopping. My dad bought me a book to read every fortnight when we went down there as a present. So I didn't go out much. I never knew where Stantonbury Church was. I never bothered to go and look or see, not for walks. I was quite content to be at home reading. And that's how it was, really.
What did your father do?
He was an agricultural machinery metal merchant.
Right.
He bought anything like that. Two locomotives, trains and things, yeah. Got pictures of those somewhere.
And you were mentioning before we started that he knew somebody who was involved with Bletchley Park before it was taken over by the government.
Well, I was saying about the stone boxes that my father bought, and at the time I remember Captain Faulkner.
Right.
Yes, I remember he lived at, we called it then, Fenny in Bletchley. And he lived up there close to where the railway line is to Woburn. And I can always remember, it used to amaze me that whenever we met him or saw him, he always wore a little black bow tie. And I seem to get the impression that he did that when he was in a uniform. I'm not sure. Not sure about that. That can't be right. But I know he always had this black bow tie on. Yes. I don't know a lot else about him, but he was always around at the time. Yes.
So if you were 12 when the war broke out, what do you remember about that? What did it feel like to you and your family and your friends?
Well, my father was very, very protective And funny enough, one of the sirens was actually on our garage down near his workplace. And when that used to blow, he used to make us all get under the table. There's never any need for it in those days. But we all used to have to get under the table and sit under there until the all clear went, you know. I can remember troops. I mean, they had no transport in those days. They used to have to walk. And we had a big grass verge in front of our house. And I can see these troops now coming down and somebody... We used to have cups of tea from the houses around, and they used to have to bed down on the grass before they got up in the morning to march on down to wherever they were going to. There was no transport for right. them. That was the sort of thing that was going on in the war. And I remember a gun being put up not too far away from us, just over the road, but it was never used, and I think they took that away. There was no use for it. Being there with a couple of army people there seeing to it, and an RAF base at Old Bradwell that was there for a little while. But no, the war, actually, I don't think people in Bradwell could feel there was a war on.
Right, so you never experienced any actual air raids or anything like that?
No, the only one they did have in New Bradwell was when they did actually bomb High Street, New Bradwell. They think that was... or what they call it, not an intentional bomb then. And a family that had moved down from London before were the victims in it, and it was next to the allotments. So there was not too much damage, but that's all there ever was in New Bradwell. Never any fear of anything. You used to be able to walk about in the dark, because it was dark at night, no lights, no nothing, but you never had any fears at all. Yeah. Not at all with it. No.
So you were at the college. When that came to an end, how old were you?
Well, 16.
You were 16. So what did you decide to do then?
Well, I did want to do typing. I passed my exams for that and shorthand and English. And my friend and I, we hadn't decided what we wanted to do or anything. And then one day, the headmistress called us both and she said, have you decided what you want to do when you finish here? And we said, well, no, as long as it's something with what we've trained for. And she said, well, I want you to, she said, if you will, go for an interview to Bletchley Park. And so we never applied for anything. It was just that we were asked to go and we went to the interview, both of us, and, you know, spoke to them, then went back again. Yes, we accepted the work there.
Right.
But... she didn't stay there too long. She didn't like her job. I think she was with Captain White in the house, and she didn't like the job because her work was sticking pins on maps all day long with very little typing.
Yes.
So she couldn't. She said, it's boring me to death. I can't stand that.
Right.
So,
so were you told by the headmistress what the work was going to be?
I only feel that Bletchley Park must have, seeing that was the technical college for teaching, I think they must have asked, you know, for two persons then.
Yes.
Or, to go. And she herself had chosen us two to go there.
And how did you go down to Bletchley Park? Did you cycle? Did you walk? Did you go on the bus? Did you catch the train?
For the interview?
For the interview, yes.
I think my father took us.
In his car, right.
Yeah, I think he took us. Because after that, the transport was in the wooden seat buses. Yes, all wooden seats.
So you came into Bletchley Park. What do you remember? Was that the first time you'd ever been to Bletchley Park? Or had you been there before?
I'd been there before as a child many times.
Right.
On a sports day, open day up there. Yes, yes.
So what do you remember about that then?
I never went in it, but I always admired it. And it was always a lovely day. I was too young, really, to think much about it then, you see.
Right. But you went down, what was that, with school or family to the sports
days?
With
family.
Right.
Yes, yes, with family.
Right.
But always admired it and admired the, as I say, the horse trough outside. And
yes.
It's just old to me, and I liked anything right. like that. Yeah.
Right. You arrived in the park. Can you remember where your interview took place?
Well, I know we, because we always used to go in the main gates. At that time, there used to be sentry boxes with army in them. And I know we went there. I think it was somewhere over, I think it was in the house.
Right. The house that we now know as the mansion.
Yes, yes. Right.
And was it just one person interviewing you, or was there several?
I think there were two.
Two?
Two in there, right. yes. Mm-hmm.
Did they do any tests with you or anything like that, typing?
Well, we had to do tests on typing. That was all just a little test, nothing much, yes. because apparently we'd had a good word spoken then by
yes.
our teacher back right. at...
And were you told at that point what the work was going to be that you were doing and why you were doing it?
No, I just understood that we were going into office work there, right. that's all.
And were you told who you would be working for?
I can't remember that. You I don't think remember. So, no.
And did they tell you that you would be able to talk about your work at this point?
Oh, no. I think at some point, I don't know whether it was then or when they had us back, you know, to arrange right. about what they were paying you. Mm. And I think then they probably said that you do know that everything here is top secret. And we said yes, and we just signed. I think we signed something to say right. that, you know, it would be top secret and you were not allowed to say anything.
Right.
Or could be trouble then sort yes. of thing, yeah. yeah.
Did they give a job title? Did they tell you what you were registered as?
Yes, I can see that on a pay packet. Clerk typist, grade 2. I can see those words on it now when I okay. first started yeah. there, yeah.
That would make sense.
Yes. Right.
So, can you remember which building you were working in?
Went straight into Hut 1 and stayed there, yes. Right.
What do you remember about Hut 1?
Well, I can remember it looked long and dark green, but it was happy hut. We were all right. happy in there. Very nice girls that I worked with, right. older than me, of course. And I can remember that we used to share clothes.
Really?
Well, they were older than me, you see, and when I left to start work, just going from school, as you might say, in uniform, I hadn't got lots of different clothes. Mm. I can remember the one skirt that my mother and I went out to buy the week before I started, probably two or three jumpers. That was my working clothes, you know. I can remember right. that. Gore skirt, that's it. And two or three jumpers, and that's your working clothes. Right. There you go. Until you get enough coupons to buy more.
Was the hut, was it one big room or was it one divided big, into individual
rooms? No, it was one big room, and in it there was one, two, three, four, five, six tables. They were not desk tables. Right. Jill, who was over us, she sat at the front, I sat over there. Yeah, six or seven tables. I think another one came in afterwards.
Right.
But, no, it was a very happy lot there. They were all people that had been billeted down from other places, yes. Yeah. yes.
Do you remember Jill's surname?
Johnson Abraham.
Was she the manager?
Yes.
The boss?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, Jill Johnson Abraham. And then we had Audrey Goodin, Joyce Radcliffe, myself, Mary Stocks, and Edna Knight.
Right. So was there anybody else that was involved with your work? Was there anybody in overall charge?
Mr. Rice.
Mr. Rice. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
And what do you remember about him?
Little man that never said much, always walked down to wherever he was going to eat with his pipe and his dog behind him. Not a lot at all, because it was Gerald that used to go in to see him. Mainly, but very pleasant person, very right. quiet, kept himself to himself, you know.
You mentioned his dog. What yeah. do you remember about his dog?
Little black Daxie.
Right.
Yeah, I think its name was Nicky, I'm not sure.
Right. You were in a big room. Was there more rooms then, perhaps, at one end
there
of the building?
There was his room, and then our big
your
room
big
went
room.
On
right.
through
right.
the doorway there, yeah.
And was your hut warm? Was it?
Oh, yes, never...
Never?
No, I never complained about anything there, right. no.
Wasn't drafty or
no,
anything like that?
No, no, no. No, not at all. And I just remember up this corner, they'd built round a little sink and tap and electric kettle facility, you know.
When you left Bletchley Park, were you told you can talk about it or anything like that?
No.
You were told you couldn't?
You told you couldn't, yes, yeah.
And when did you realise you could talk about it?
Only when it was announced that... I don't know where I heard that. Because then my father-in-law and my brother-in-law, they all went to work at Hanslope Park. Before they went there, I had someone from Hanslope come to ask me if I would verify that they would be, you know, the right persons.
Right. When it was announced, were you comfortable talking about it? When did you first mention it to your family that you were at Bletchley Park? Would be another way of asking the same question.
I don't think we ever bothered. We knew we couldn't, so it was a right. conversation that you never sort of had. Or,
but you must have told them at some point.
After all those years, well, what was it to tell? You know, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, as I say, I was shocked when I saw stories came up, silly stories on telly and that. You see,
right.
Good heavens, no, that's right. not right. And
but there must have been a point that you told your family, because otherwise you wouldn't have come to Bletchley Park 2 weeks ago.
Yes, they knew I worked at Bletchley right. Park, but I never told them that I couldn't talk to you about Bletchley Park right. because they wouldn't okay. be interested.
Right.
When you did tell us, Grandad used to say that it was a mental home.
Oh, yes,
and
I know.
That's what they used to say.
They used to say about
and he used to joke
the persons
that, used to
work that worked at Bletchley Park. It was a mental home during right. the war.
Just for the record, that was Lee, Gwen's
grandson.
So thank you for that. That was brilliant. Yeah, we've heard other people say something similar, that was
yeah.
a...
Yeah.
Funny
yeah.
farm is the
oh,
phrase
yes.
we've heard from some
yeah.
people. Right. So how do you feel about it now?
Marvellous. I'm glad because I've always loved it. I've always right. loved Bletchley Park itself. I've always loved everything connected with it. It
right.
was a lovely working place, you know,
right.
with all the people that I worked with.
Yes.
No, I've loved Bletchley Park.
Right. What's it like going back for the reunions? How does that feel?
Oh, I love going back.
Do you? Mm. Have you been to many?
Yes, quite a few, because right. I've been with each of you, haven't I? And, with Jean, my sister, and those. Yeah, yes, often I've gone back.
Hoping to see you again next year.
Oh, yeah, love to.
Yeah.
Love to, yeah.
Well, I think that was absolutely fantastic.
Was it
You've
really?
Done extremely well.
Oh, thank you.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been nice seeing you again.
Now, we know from our collections that our veterans didn't just write accounts of their time here, but they also drew pictures and cartoons, and they also wrote poems and songs and all kinds of things that give a bit more of a light-hearted look at Bletchley Park. I think you've got one of those to share with us today.
Yes. Betty Laurie, she told us about how at the theatrical productions and reviews that took place at Bletchley Park, well, the number of songs they sang, but a particular one she kept the lyric sheet for, was a version of an old song popular at the time called Trees. I think that I shall never see a sight as lovely as a tree, I think it begins. And there was a Bletchley Park version with sort of suitably amusing words. And you can hear that in one of our exhibitions, in the off-duty exhibition, hear her reading it out. And we liked this so much, we actually went back, because she hadn't read the thing out in full, she'd handed us the copy. We went back and she agreed to read it out in full. So we did go back and we've got a recording of Betty Laurie reading out Trees. And another interesting thing about Betty is she worked with the grandmother of the Duchess of Cambridge, who people may well remember worked in one of the huts at Bletchley Park.
I left school in 1942 and I went to a secretarial college, and I was extremely bad at it. It wasn't my métier at all. And everybody else finished in about 6 months, and I took 9 months to get my speeds up and everything, so I had to spend an extra term where I was. And we were evacuated from London. It was a Kerr Sanders Secretarial College, and we went to a wonderful place at Stanway in Gloucestershire, in Stanway House, which was taken over by the college for the war. And anyway, I left there, I suppose, just at the end of, must have been just the end of 43, and I tried to get into the services, but the only thing that was open at the time was cooking in the ATS, which wasn't exactly my métier. So my father was very friendly with the person who ran the board for employment agency in York, and he gave me an interview with her. And that's how we got to Bletchley, through her entirely.
Did they give you any hint about what the work would be at Bletchley? Or
no, they hadn't a clue. No. I imagined I would be using my secretarial work, but in fact I didn't.
Did they ask you any particular questions that you realised later were relevant to Bletchley or anything like that?
No, I don't think so at all. They just told me it was working for the Foreign Office.
Right, yeah. So then you had to presumably make your way to Bletchley on the train, was that?
Yes, well, she let me meet up with another girl from York who was also going, and we got to know each other a little bit, and we travelled down together, and we got to Bletchley, and I never saw her from that day to this. You know, you signed the Official Secrets Act, then you were told where you were going to be billeted. I was taken to my billet, which was this council house in Bedford. I can't remember the address, but it was a fairly new council house, so I was very lucky, because they had a bath, and they used it for the proper purposes. And in Yorkshire, we'd always been told that everybody in a council house who'd had a bathroom put in after the council house was built kept coals in the bath. So I was pretty happy to find that we didn't. But we only got one bath a week, and for which that we had to pay. And I think I got 2 guineas a week, of which 1 guinea immediately went to my billet. And paying for a bath was quite an expensive exercise, really. And for a month I was there. I shared a room with another girl whom I'd never met before and who got there first. So she got a nice double bed and I got a sort of truckle bed on the floor. I was lucky I didn't have to share the bed with her, I suppose. Anyway, I never saw her again from that day to the next one, when I was rebilleted, because I had to go into shift work and you couldn't do that from Bedford. So I was extremely lucky. I went to the Grange at Aspley Guys, which was bang next door to the church, to a lovely family called Allen. Kenneth Allen was an engineer who had a big engineering firm in Bedford and was doing a lot for the war. And I had the downstairs bedroom. And I was extremely comfortable and very, very lucky. And they had a lovely garden to sit in when I wasn't working. And I had to go down then to Aspley Guys in the dark when I went on night duty, catch the transport. And I had to go past the churchyard. And I remember I was always very scared in the dark. You couldn't have a torch. Then we were transported in.
And was this like a big bus that picked you up?
It was a bus. But it had slatted wooden seats and was pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah. The drivers, were they civilians or do you remember?
I don't remember the drivers at all. Yeah. I do remember some of the people we picked up on the way because there were two men we used to pick up regularly called, I called them the goats because they both had goatee beards and they both had long hair. And one winter's day we went past them to pick them up and there they were standing at the side of the road, each wearing a pixie hood in Angora wool. And I don't know what their names were, but they were obviously the brilliantly insane, which is mentioned in the poem. And one had brick red hair, so he had a brick red pixie hood, and the other had dark hair, and he had a powder blue one. And we were all absolutely convulsed.
Do you think they were doing this for a laugh, or did they not realise that they looked a bit sort of strange?
Well, I don't know. We were all very polite those days. We probably hid our giggles.
Yeah. Tell me about the work you were doing.
Well, to start off with, I was in what was called Williams Control, which was then renamed CMY, which stood for Commercial and Miscellaneous Y. And our job was to hourly monitor all the radio messages which were being sent all over the world. For instance, there was DKJ to JZ2, which was Jakarta to Osaka, I remember. And we had to monitor the length of time that they were on the air. And if they exceeded that time, we had to make sure that we reported it, because it could have been that other kind of messages were being sent, other than commercial, on over that radio wave. So that was the job. We filled in schedules, hourly schedules of all these. We had a great bunch of schedules. And every hour I had to ring up, so many different places, Brora, Denmark Hill, Whitchurch, enormous number of places. I can't remember how many telephone numbers I had to ring. And one of the telephones was one of these. Yeah. I had to wind it up in order to ring. And I got quite worried about it. I thought this arm was going to get so... And then you spoke to the people at the end and they gave you a report.
So they were telling you how long these stations were on the air, was that?
Yes.
When you were speaking over the telephone, if you know, were these sort of secure telephones or were they just ordinary phones, or as far as you know?
The others were, as far as I remember, were ordinary phones. Yeah. There was one, I can't remember where it went to, which I had to wind in order to get through.
Mm. So did you have to speak in a sort of a guarded way?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, there was only three or four people in the room.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, you know, the possibility of the enemy sort of listening into your conversation. I mean, I imagine if it was going over the landline, that was pretty slim by then. But
I don't know whether they were all... But, I mean, I have no idea. What was it they used to do? Because, I mean, the prime ministers from America and Britain used to have telephone conversations all the time, and they were scrambled. Whether ours were scrambled, I don't know.
No, OK, thank you. So this was... You did mention the dates earlier. You arrived at Bletchley Park in...
I arrived in January 44.
44, OK, thanks. Yeah. Did you do that sort of same job the whole time you were there?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. But you were a supervisor as well as...
Well, I was in charge of my watch.
Yeah.
And I was very cross when I was put in charge of my watch because I didn't get any more money. And I thought I jolly well ought to have done, but because I wasn't 21, I wasn't entitled to any more. They were very strict about that.
And how many people were you in charge of on the watch?
Well, there were three or four.
And amongst these people, some names we've heard of before, is that right? Can you remember the names of them?
Yes, I do. Yes. My immediate superior was Joyce Buxton, and she was a sort of PA to a chap called Leo Clark. And then it was Bungy Williams who was at the head.
Yeah.
And people I worked with, there was Sylvia Ross, whose family were very kind to me. And when I finally left Bletchley and had to go up to London, I used to commute from Northwood where they lived. And they had me as a PG, which was very kind of them. And there was a girl called, there was somebody mother soul, but I can't remember her Christian name. And, of course, the Glassborough twins. And there was somebody called Mavis somebody, who I remember one day went up to London. And she was a funny little girl. She came from Wales. And she said that she met an American soldier who took her to a hotel and, needless to say, then took her up to a bedroom. Mm. And she told us this story with great gusto of how she sat on the edge of the bed, swinging her legs while he got undressed. And then she said, "Well, I think I'll go now." And somehow she managed to do so. So this was one of our catchphrases whenever we left the hut, where you say, "Well, I think I'll go now."
Yes.
There was another Sylvia who came from Wales, who was a lovely girl, but terribly dreamy. She came from Brecon. When we went up to London or anything, she never looked about for traffic. I mean, there wasn't much traffic, I suppose, but it was still London. It was a city. Mm. And we kept on saying, "You're not in Brecon now," because she never looked at to see what traffic was doing.
Mm.
She was a lovely person, very nice. Mm. And there was somebody called Kitty. Did I mention her?
No.
And I don't know what her surname is. And there was a girl called Barbara Start. And Barbara, I went to stay with her aunt and uncle in Amersham, funnily enough. And she took me for a weekend. She was a very nice girl.
How much understanding did you have of what Bletchley Park was about and how you fitted into it?
Well, I think just using your own common sense, you did realise that messages were being passed.
Mm.
And obviously, somebody was picking up the messages and managing to do something with them. But I had no idea about Enigma or Colossus or anything else at all. No.
So you kept very much to yourself and didn't speak to anyone outside your...
Well, occasionally. I mean, one of the Air Force men took me out for a bit. Well, we just happened to meet on my day off when we were cycling or something.
Mm.
But no, you didn't really, because you were on shift work, so your times were always different. And you certainly never went into any other hut.
No.
Never. It was completely verboten.
What about meals and things? Did you...
Yes, I used to go into the canteen in the main house, and I remember a friend of mine, one of the other girls, went to the canteen once, and to her horror, she found an insect in her pudding. So she came back to the hut and produced this insect and found an empty matchbox, put it in, and sent it to the catering manageress. And she was absolutely disgusted because she said, I found this cockroach in my pudding. And the manageress eventually wrote back and said, no apology whatsoever, saying, it wasn't a cockroach, it was a cricket.
And what did you do when you had some time off?
Well, sometimes I went to the Rosses. Sometimes I went to other friends of mine. I went to have a friend in Oxford. Then I sometimes went up to London, where I'd met this man whom I used to ring Denmark Hill. And he took me to Simpsons, I remember. In those days, we thought it was wonderful, because they came round with these trolleys and these enormous great silver covers over a wonderful roast, which in the wartime it was really lovely to have. And I didn't know London, and he knew London very well, so we went all round. You know, we went to the Royal Academy and Madame Tussauds and all those sort of things, which he took me round. So that was very nice. I got to know London a little bit.
Did you ever get the chance to go home to New York?
Oh, yes, I went home. Yes, I did. But you used to get quite a, you know, short time. I went home on my leaves, my long leaves, yes. Yeah.
And did your family or your friends ever ask what you were doing? Or?
No, my family were very reserved and very good about it. Most of my friends, I think, were in uniform, which would have been much easier. But, no, I don't think that happened, really.
Did you ever get involved or attend any of the plays or concerts at Bletchley Park?
Yes, I did. Yeah. This is what I've got that there. They had some very good entertainments, sometimes done by the services. I can't really remember much about it. But in there, you'll find the Rhine.
Oh, yes. Very
and also, I don't know whether you've got the old... Have you got the billeting thing? Have you got one of those?
I've not seen this. We've got quite a few sort of things like this in the archive. I won't
probably
open
in much better condition than mine is.
Well, I don't know. I've not seen this particular one. People have often sent... This is a little book, well, leaflet, isn't it, called On Going Into a Billet.
That.
Oh, thank you. So this is your instructions on...
That's what I was given when I went into a billet.
Ah, and this is...
And that is the poem, which is...
Bletchley Park. Do you want to sing it? Or?
Well, I can't sing. Do you know the tune of trees?
I don't, but I'm sure we can find it quite easily.
Well, I think that I shall never see a thing as wonderful as a tree, or sort of futures as a tree.
Yes.
I think it is.
Yes.
I think that I shall never see a sight so curious as BP. This place, called up at war's behest, and peopled with the queerly dressed. Yet what they did, they could not say, nor ever shall till Judgment Day. For 6 long years we have been there, subject to local scorn and stare. We come by transport and by train, the dull, the brilliantly insane. What were we for? Where shall we be when God at last reduns BP? The Air Force types that never fly, soldiers who neither do nor die, landlubber sailors, beards complete, long-haired civilians, slim, effete. Why they were there, they never knew. And when they told, it wasn't true. If I should die, think this of me. I served my country at BP. And should my son ask, what did you in the atomic World War II? God only knows. And he won't tell. For after all, BP is hell.
And this was written then?
That's what they sang at one of the entertainments we had. And it was fantastic.
Thank you. You were never tempted to tread the boards yourself or anything, were you?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't exactly an entertainer.
Just going back to the work you did, you mentioned the telephones.
Yes.
That was really the only equipment you used. It was it all paper and pencil?
Otherwise, paper and pencil, absolutely, yes.
And who were you reporting your work to?
I would report it to Joyce Buxton if she was on duty, or to Leo Clark, and they presumably told Bungie Williams. Mm.
You were put in charge of the shift at one stage, but you did roughly the same job for the
time.
I
did the same job the whole time I was there.
Yeah. And, of course, with the war ending, or the war with Germany ended in May 45, so...
Yes, well, quite shortly after that, and I'm not sure what date it was, I left Bletchley and was sent up to London. And when we were in London, we were in an office above a dress shop, I think it was, and whatever street it is that Thomas Cook is in, the big Thomas Cook, we were bang opposite the big Thomas Cook, which is still there, I think.
Is it Berkeley Street?
Might be Berkeley Street, I'm not sure, do you know?
That's certainly what we have you down, I think, from one of the few surviving wartime records, which just says the building, it doesn't say anything more than that.
Yes, but it was above a dress shop, I think it was.
I believe that probably was Berkeley Street. And was that doing the same sort of work there?
Doing exactly the same work. And I commuted from Northwood. And I had great... Well, in the commute, I remember going to the office once in a big hurry, because I don't think I got off at Green Park or something like that, around the corner from Green Park. And I was going very fast round a bend, and I went straight into the arms of Stuart Granger, who was my pin-up boy.
Wow. And how long were you there before you...
I must have left in... I suppose I went there in 45 too. I think I must have left in the end of 46.
Oh, right.
Or maybe a bit later than that.
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know whether your records hold. I really don't know when I did leave.
Did they ask if you were happy to stay on? Or did they?
No, it made quite a fuss when I said I wanted to leave. But, I mean, the war... I didn't leave, obviously, until after the war in Japan was over.
No.
Because that's what we were doing by that time. Yeah. It was Japan, not...
Yes.
Not...
Yes, I mentioned VE Day, and that's not wasn't really relevant to what you were doing, because it was the Japanese...
Well, it was still relevant, because of the Far East.
What I'm saying is the war... For many people, the war finished with VE Day, because they were working on Enigma.
Yes, well, it didn't for me.
No. Did you celebrate VE Day at all?
No, because I was on night duty for VE. And there was no question of celebrating until VE plus two, when I decided I would go up to London, and the Glassborough twins were off duty that day, so I invited them to go up with me. And we met this chap in London whom I knew, and he took us to outside Buckingham Palace, and there was still quite a lot of excitement, but not obviously as great as if I'd been able to go the first evening. And then we sat in Green Park, and he produced a big bottle of gin, and a bottle of baby's orange juice, which I don't know how he obtained that, because he wasn't married. He certainly had no access to babies that I knew of. But anyway, and we sat there and we drank all this. And we all got completely whistled, particularly the Glassboroughs, who were worse than me. And somehow I had to go back onto night duty. And somehow or other, I think he must have put us on the right bus. And we got off at... Somehow I managed to get us off at Euston Station. But in the meantime, I lost my handbag under the seat or something. And I remember, I couldn't have cared less. Normally, I'd be in an absolute state of having lost my handbag. Anyway, I must have retrieved my handbag in time to get off the bus. And we went into Euston Station. And the two girls wanted to go to the loo. And they were banging on the loo door like mad. And it was locked. So I had to explain to them it was locked and they hadn't got a hope of getting in. Anyway, and then we got on the train and I managed to push them off at the stop before Bletchley, where they were billeted, and then I went on to Bletchley. So I was partially responsible for the grandmother of the Duchess of Cambridge getting pickled.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.